over and over again, I tried to let the entire book reflect this, that the holiness of all the saints is only the holiness of Jesus reflected in their lives.
Pastor Will Wheaton, author of the new book, Celebrating the Saints.
And this holiness of Christ is the thing which the saints grabbed onto in faith, and it illumined their lives.
You can purchase Celebrating the Saints by calling 1-800-325-3040 or at issuesetc.org. It's an adage many live by. I have found it useful as well. Don't discuss politics and religion. Now, as part of my job here, I necessarily discuss politics and religion, so that's the exception. In your personal life, in your family life, people that you barely know, people that you are still getting to know, probably a good idea, just as a general rule, to keep the politics and religion conversation to a minimum. It tends to create a little tension, make for awkward conversation sometimes, and makes people uncomfortable. That doesn't mean that it's off limits. It's just one of those kind of polite rules of society. But is it possible nowadays, here in 21st century America, to talk about any of the big important issues facing us without discussing either politics or religion? In fact, there's a new survey from Lifeway about how Americans discuss or don't discuss politics and religion. Joining us to talk about it, Terry Mattingly, Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate, and founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Glad to be here.
Is it possible to discuss the most important issues facing Americans today without breaking that old adage, without violating that adage, don't discuss politics or religion?
Well, there are individual topics, maybe ranging from the Gulf War to, I don't even know if you could talk about college football these days without religion coming up. But I think there might be individual topics. But in the era after Roe versus Wade, I think it's hard to talk about American politics without talking about social, cultural, and moral issues, which raises a third question. I don't know about you, but when I was growing up, there was the third topic that we were told not to talk about. You're not supposed to talk about religion. You were not supposed to talk about politics, and you were not supposed to talk about sex. Well, I mean, how much of what goes on in America today can you discuss without all three of those at the same time? it's really just kind of the era that we're in. The line between politics and religion has really blurred, which is, this week I did a column about that, about the fact that the religious liberty fights, you know, go on and on and on. But the folks at Lifeway Research in Nashville did a poll, and they found out that right now a significant number of Americans, even a majority of Americans, are so burned out by controversy about religion that at this moment in history, a majority of Americans would rather talk about politics than talk about religion. And if that's the case, that raises all kinds of questions for the modern church, synagogue, mosque, or anybody else.
What in particular interested you about this Lifeway survey on Americans discussing politics and religion? What were the standout points for you?
Well, I mean, once again, just the fact that especially during the White House race from hell, you know, that we're in right now with two candidates whose popularity ratings are like in the 30s at this point, and their hate ratings are in the 50s, if not creeping up on 60. In terms of what the population, the public thinks of them. Right now, how much do you enjoy talking politics with anybody? I mean, it's like you go out of your way to avoid speaking, you know, the candidates whose names must not be spoken, to put it in Harry Potter language. We do everything we can, and yet to have a survey come in that say most Americans at this point find it less painful or less intimidating to talk about politics than to talk about religion, I thought that just hooked me immediately. I thought that was fascinating. The other question I wondered was whether the people who did the survey attempted to define what is politics and what is religion. And as it turned out, they didn't. they left that up to the individual involved in answering the questions in the poll to define what was spiritual, what was political, what was religious, what was government or voting or whatever. And the more we talked about it, the more they realized that, in effect, you had two different situations. If you're a churchgoer and you're an evangelical, you're a Catholic, you're an Orthodox Jew or whatever, when you start a conversation about, let's say, very important subjects, such as raising your children or the state of marriage, for you, that is a religious conversation. It's a doctrinal conversation, even, in many cases. And in the case of some Catholic and Orthodox doctrines or whatever, it can get down into the very intimate details of your own life, but it's all religion. It's all a part of your faith. But if you're having that conversation at a coffee shop with someone you met at work, the minute you say marriage or family to that other person involved in the conversation, they may immediately think some ballot initiative, or they may be putting this in the context of arguments about same-sex marriage or whatever. What is a religious conversation to you might be a completely awkward, tense, even anger-producing political conversation to someone else in American life, depending on how they relate to the topic of faith. Does that make sense?
I'm curious what your take on the first presidential debate was. We have two candidates there. Both of them have been fairly open, although not gabby, about their religious affiliations. And then the moderator of that debate, Lester Holt, your colleague Bobby Ross Jr., wrote a whole article on the faith of this journalist. And yet, if I'm not mistaken, I don't think, except for the ghosts that lurked there, as you say, I don't think any questions were asked or any answers were given with respect to the faith of either of those candidates or the big issues connected to them.
Well, at this point, I have to beg out a little bit because I was actually involved in a speaking engagement. I'm on the West Coast right now, and I was actually involved in a speaking engagement while the debate was going on. But I'll also admit, if I think we may have mentioned it in earlier podcasts, I'm living currently under a very strict policy for my own health, state of mental health and sanity, which is I do not allow Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump to appear on a TV screen anywhere within my eyesight. So I'm operating right now with a strict policy of not even looking at either of those people. Now, of course, that meant that I looked it all up later on Twitter and at least followed some of the reactions to the speech. But I'm going out of my way right now not to watch either of them. My reaction to the lack of religion is that essentially neither one of them had anything to gain by talking about religious topics. Trump, in that it seems like every time he opens his mouth about it outside of private meetings with evangelical or fundamentalist leaders or whatever, he just can't seem to get the wording right. And Hillary, as much as she wants to be known as a Methodist and a person of faith, never forget that at this moment, the largest religious voting bloc in the modern Democratic Party is atheist, agnostic, religiously unaffiliated. So Hillary can't be anxious to talk to the general public because to some degree she might upset a very large constituency group within her own party. So you know what? I wasn't surprised by that at all, but I predict that with people discussing it, that something about that will show up in one of the next two debates.
Terry Mattingly is our guest. We're talking about a survey on how Americans discuss politics and religion. When we come back, we'll talk about the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights.
But politics, religion, and her. But politics, religion, and her.
Right now, many churches are planning their budgets for the next fiscal year. You can promote your confessional Lutheran church and support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by joining our congregational sponsorship program, the Issues Etc. 300. We're looking for 300 congregations to include $1,000 in their mission or advertising budgets. You'll find an informational flyer on the support page at issuesetc.org. Don't miss your congregation's budget deadline, the Issues Etc. 300.
Metro East Lutheran High School in Edwardsville, Illinois, engages young adults in a Christ-centered environment, delivering academic excellence and spiritual growth to develop Christian leaders for tomorrow. We provide a Christ-focused alternative to public high schools. Many of our students receive tuition assistance. To help us provide tuition assistance to more students, go to melhs.org and click on the giving page, or call me, Dr. J. Krause, principal, at 618-656-0043.
Daily exercise for the Christian mind. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Come and experience firsthand by sitting down in classes and actually hearing professors, coming to chapel, which is always the high point of the day, to hear the Word of God and to lift our voices in song.
Issues Etc. regular guest Dr. Paul Grimm on why you should consider visiting Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Spend time talking to professors. I mean, there's not a professor here who will not be willing to take time, whether it's after chapel during the coffee hour or just to come into one study and sit down and talk for a while, to answer questions, to help them to get a sense of, A, do they want to be a pastor or a deaconess? And then B, is this the right place? And, well, maybe C would be the question, is now the right time for them to make that decision?
If you've contemplated the vocation of pastor or deaconess, contact Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, 1-800-481-2155, 800-481-2155, or send an email to admission@ctsfw.edu. Welcome back to Issues Etc. Terry Mattingly is our guest. We're talking about a survey on how Americans discuss politics and religion. Terry, I'd like your thoughts on the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights. They issued a report recently, and then their chairman spoke to the press on the nexus of civil liberties and religious liberty.
Right. Yeah, that was a bombshell. I mean, here you have a bipartisan government agency that comes out with a report that in effect said that the First Amendment rights of religious liberty, and I guess the First Amendment in general, is now a secondary power in American life to the concepts of all forms of concepts of civil rights. So civil rights now trump all references to religious liberty. And the quotes... The quote that went viral was an actual quote from Julian Castro, and I can actually read that. I have it here in front of me in my screen. The phrases religious liberty and religious freedom will stand for nothing except hypocrisy, so long as they remain code words for discrimination, intolerance, racism, sexism, homophobia, Islamophobia, or any form of intolerance. And earlier, the commission itself, when listing civil rights, basic established civil rights in American life, they listed race, color, national origin, sex, disability status, sexual orientation, and gender identity, and said that all of those are now established grounds for civil rights, which, by the way, I don't think is accurate until the Supreme Court rules on some of those. And we don't have definitive rulings on some of them, but the point was made. They're saying at this point, all of these claims of identity for civil rights purposes now trump religious freedom, when, of course, the irony is that here you have religious liberty and freedom of expression in the First Amendment in the Bill of Rights as a clearly articulated foundation principle of our land and our republic. It was certainly a shocking statement, even if it wasn't terribly surprising. I thought it represented a benchmark, and I had been walking around for a week with that quote in my computer thinking, how in the world, are we going to address this? And then this survey came out, so I linked the two, and simply to state that when you have a clash between civil rights and religious rights, those were things that to Martin Luther King Jr., there was no line between civil rights and religious liberty in his mind. The other thing that it hit me is, you know, we started this conversation by saying you're not supposed to talk about religion, politics, or sex. It also hit me that a part of living in a tolerant society is that there are things that we agree to protect. There are things that we agree to disagree on them. We leave them in place even though they make us uncomfortable. Even though we don't agree, we say that in our society people are going to have the right to freedom of conscience on these issues. Amish people don't have to go to war, for example. I mean, we have and other exemptions in our society. Whereas now, those tensions are gone legally. They still exist there in real life. People don't want to talk about religion. They're scared to talk about religion. They're scared, or they get angry if they talk about religion. All of that's a reality. But according to the Civil Rights Commission, the tension is now legally gone. We now know what is a primary right and what is a secondary right. And even though it's in the First Amendment, it's clear that in the eyes of that agency, talking about religion is now dangerous. You could violate someone's civil rights by talking about religion. So forget free speech. Forget freedom of religion. These are now secondary. And I thought that was, frankly, I thought that was stunning.
So you are saying, just to be clear here, Terry, you are saying that according to the latest from the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights, religious liberty is no longer included in the category of civil liberties.
Well, you know, I don't, to some degree, it never has been because it was its own category. It was its own constitutional foundation principle of our society and our culture. Where you could make a case that religious liberty was too important to be listed simply as another civil right. It's in the Bill of Rights itself. And journalists should never forget that the freedom of speech and freedom of conscience that protects the press is the same thing that protects religion. That, you know, I don't want to be heard. I don't want people to hear me saying that that means religion is more important than civil rights. What it meant is that neither one could cancel out the other. That at some point in our lives, we had to say, you know, we wish that everybody agreed on this, but we can't and we will not be able to settle it. We will not be able to settle this issue. We're going to have to live with that tension because religion is a category that must not be violated in terms of freedom of conscience. Not to mention the fact that it's recognized the same way in the International Charter of Human Rights from the UN. Religion is its own category, but now it appears to be a secondary category in the Republic.
So what happens then when it is simply assumed as it is by Julian Castro of the U.S. Commission on Human Rights that religious liberty at this point is just another name for bigotry? What then? What's the next step?
Well, we're waiting for the Supreme Court to officially establish that the mysterious conditions related to gender and sexual orientation equals the clearly genetic information linked to race. But we, of course, we have the case that you and I have discussed before, the Bob Jones case years ago, in which Bob Jones was proclaiming a religious doctrine relating to interracial dating, which local people, it wasn't people at the school, it wasn't black students at the school, but some people filed against Bob Jones. And in the famous Bob Jones case in the late 70s, early 80s, the court established that civil rights related to race trumped religious liberty. And thus, for the first time, you had the U.S. government being able to say, we're taking away your tax-exempt status because your doctrine is wrong. Normally, the whole idea of church-state separation was that the government was not supposed to be determining which religious doctrines were right and which religious doctrines were wrong. But the Bob Jones case opened that door, which was why it was so important at the U.S. Supreme Court when they were talking in the same-sex marriage case, and someone raised the issue of the Bob Jones case and whether religious organizations might lose their tax-exempt status might lose other freedoms here in the United States. And the representative of the current Justice Department said, yes, no doubt about it, the Bob Jones case is very relevant to what we're discussing right now. So at the very least, we're looking at efforts like the recent effort here in California, where I am at the moment, to strip religious colleges of some of their protections from anti-discrimination laws, because it would force them to violate the teachings of their own churches, their own doctrinal statements that people sign when they voluntarily attend those schools as students or work there as faculty or anything else. These are the sorts of actions that we're beginning to see. All religious institutions in America that have doctrines attached to their identities at this point have got to start thinking, what would the implication be if we lost all of our tax-exempt status? How would that affect our ability to carry on with our work? Notice, a religious college has got to think, what would happen if tomorrow we lost all ability for our students to receive government loans? What would happen if we lost our tax-exempt status and churches and donors and philanthropists and foundations could no longer give money to our college or university and receive a tax credit for that? How many of those gifts would just suddenly go away? This is really serious business. I think you and I discussed it before in the context of the Missouri Synod Lutheran colleges and universities. How many of them could survive without any tax exemption?
Zero.
And without any accessibility for their students to government loans? How many could make it?
None. They would simply have to do what I've actually suggested they do, which is the Hillsdale model. Just don't accept it.
Yeah.
Wean yourself from it now before you are forced, before the government takes the bottle away.
Yep, but a lot of those schools are not going to be able to survive under those circumstances, and a lot of the schools are going to choose not to. They're going to try to find some way to dot the I's and cross the T's where they still look religious, but in effect they've written their doctrinal statements out of existence. I guarantee you that some schools will do that.
Does the Lifeway survey indicate in any way that the American people are going along with this idea of separating civil liberties from religious liberty?
It certainly means that a significant number of them are. And whether or not they have articulated it all the way to that logical conclusion, or at this point, are they just fed up? They're sick of arguing about religion. They're sick of arguing about morality and politics, and they just wish the whole thing would go away. That's not a complete capitulation at that point, but it's a start. So I don't think I can answer your question right now. But according to the Lifeway survey, it's very clear that half the nation or more is now officially uncomfortable having conversations about religion. And that certainly raises a challenge. I mean, forget politics for a moment. That raises a challenge to ministers and congregations and parachurch ministries and others that are going to try to work in this society. They have to know that before they make their plans for how to be effective.
You mentioned earlier, for some historical perspective, Martin Luther King Jr. Could he have made the case he made for civil rights without the foundation in the Christian worldview or Christian thought that he had?
Well, I mean, that raises the question. Obviously, the UN Charter of Universal Rights, there have been tensions about it because people have said, people, for example, in majority Muslim societies have said that the way women's rights are articulated in that charter, that's an expression of Western values. And when they say Western values, the Muslim world means the Judeo-Christian world. You're trying to force Judeo-Christian values on us as Muslim cultures, and we think that's wrong. But the origins of the UN Charter were, if anything, they were secular. So this raises the issue once again, your question does, of whether you could draw a line between the values that we hold dear here in the West and their actual religious roots? Are we going to try to keep the fruit on the tree while cutting the roots out from underneath it? That's the question. I made the reference earlier. If you read the writings of Martin Luther King Jr., or even a radical Catholic such as Dorothy Day, or someone like that, let alone if you read the writings of, say, Pope Benedict XVI or St. John Paul II, they make it explicit that Europe right now is suffering from an unwillingness to admit its Christian roots are a part of its concepts of human rights, etc., and thus those rights are being threatened. So at this point, let's put it this way, that topic is certainly on the table. Even in their most secular forms like the UN Charter, you dig deep enough and you hit the values of the free Western world, and that takes you right full circle back to Judeo-Christian thought and influence.
Finally, Terry, you said that the Lifeway survey certainly reflects an aversion on the part of the American people to deal with these issues. Is it also reflective of a certain apathy about religious liberty?
Yeah, I guess they take it for granted, and they can't imagine a society without them. But when you're dealing with a culture now where 25% of the American public is either agnostic, atheist, religious unaffiliated, or a part of religious traditions that really struggle with traditional forms of faith, what some witty sociologists called the anti-evangelical voters. When you look at the size of that block in American life and the fact that it's now as large as the percentage of Americans who practice a religious faith in a truly devout or traditional manner, somewhere between 20 and 25% of the nation's population, I think at this point you'd have to say we're not in the America that we knew before. And apathy at that point becomes just as dangerous as actual beliefs that oppose religion. I mean, we used to have many atheists and agnostics in our society who were totally opposed to religion, but they were totally committed to religious liberty. That's not where we are anymore, plain and simple.
Terry Mattingly is Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate, and founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, thanks for being our guest.
Glad to be here.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll discuss St. Michael and All Angels. Pastor Will Whedon will be our guest. He's author of the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for September, Celebrating the Saints. It takes you through an entire year, day by day almost, with all of the commemorations, the memories, the feasts and festivals that punctuate the church year. For your personal devotional use, it's a great resource called Celebrating the Saints from Concordia Publishing House. Their number, 1-800-325-3040. Or browse before you buy at our website, issuesetc.org. I'm Todd Wilkin. I'll talk with you tomorrow. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
In a world awash with all sorts of information, opinions, and ideas, there is still a place where God's Word is the central and only focus. Messiah Lutheran Church, 801 North Madison, Lebanon, Illinois. At 9 o'clock on Sunday mornings, God's people gather there to listen to Him. There you will find His words of law and gospel, and of course, our Lord's Holy Supper. Bible classes focus on the Bible and the Lutheran confessions. Come, listen, believe, and live, and check out our website at messiahlebanon.org.